In our last unit, we discussed how the form of corporate governance resembles the development of political states. We cited the three classical forms of government: monarchy, aristocracy, and republic. And we talked about how Cicero advocated for a mixed form of government that had elements of all three, as Wes Cecil here explains.
And here's the problem. If you have a king, a bad king becomes a tyrant. If you have an aristocracy, a bad aristocracy becomes an oligarchy. And if you have democracy, bad democracy becomes mob rule. And one of his characters, I can't remember all the names, it's Lamont. It's probably Lamont. Lamont, Maurice, and Ed are having a debate. Think of it that way. But one of them says, look, no matter what you say for democracy or for aristocracy, the worst thing is mob rule. Because when the mob breaks out, they burn everything down without any judgment. Even the worst tyrant will at least protect his stuff. That's the argument for a king, by the way. And there's, you know, there's some wisdom to this, because history shows that mob rule, you know, the French Revolution demonstrated pretty strongly that mob rule, bad, you know. And so Cicero pulls from this a unique view. And because he's a conservative guy, he says a mixed constitution is best. You don't want just a democracy or just an aristocracy or just a king. You want all of them, which is the kind of constitution Rome had. And he understood that there were problems with this, and he wanted reforms. But basically what he said is a republican model that has democratic elements, where the masses have some representation, not too much. An aristocratic element, where the wealthiest, the best people, had most of the power, but had checks and balances. And then in the Roman system, it was this, the consuls, of which, remember, Cicero himself was one, which was this rotating sort of supreme person, although with very limited powers. This may sound familiar to you. We're about to get to that. And so he argued vociferously that what you do is you avoid the worst of all three systems by using the best of all three systems as checks and balances. And so it's a strange, imperfect, Cicero said this is not a perfect system, but it avoids the ills of all of the other systems that seem so reasonable and good.
This Roman model was later adopted by the United States. In its original conception, there were supposed to be three parts to the government based on the three classical forms of government: a president standing in for king, a senate standing in for aristocracy, and House of Representatives standing in for republic. These three elements seem to exist in a nascent form in the modern corporation, which has a managerial class, who represent the executive branch, the shareholder class, who are analogous to an aristocracy, and labor, who stand in for republic. When all three of these stand in balance to each other, the corporation prospers. When one of these assumes power at the expense of the other two, then imbalances occur. This happened after the World War II period. According to economist Ha-Jun Chang in his book, Bad Samaritans, an industrial titan like the United States prospered due to the fact that Europe and Asia were blown up after the war. At its height in 1950, the U.S. accounted for 85% of manufactured goods around the world. This couldn't last forever, of course. And as Europe and Japan rebuilt, they took market share from the United States. Growth, as it always eventually does, naturally declined. Fear of declining profits sent shockwaves through Wall Street. To keep up the appearance of increased revenues, they realized that they had to get money from somewhere other than increased productivity or consumption. They did this by embezzling money away from the workers. As technology made them vastly more efficient with email, fax machine, and other devices, causing them to increase their work yield by 400%, their pay didn't keep up pace with this. Corporations found ways to depress wages, such as encouraging women to enter the workforce in the 1970s. By doubling the labor pool, they could cut wages in half. Scarcity, after all, imparts value. The fewer workers you have, the more bargaining power they have. The more workers you have, the less you can pay people competing for finite jobs. After using women in the workforce, they depressed wages further still by outsourcing jobs to other countries. One such event that facilitated this was the fall of Eastern Europe in the 1980s. In 1989, five countries went into revolution and left the Soviet sphere and had their labor pools integrated into the West. The following year, in 1990, China entered the world's labor markets. This titanic wave of new workers depressed the political power and influence of workers in the West. Unions collapsed as a result. Companies could hire 47 people in Asia for the price of just one U.S. worker. All things told, an estimated $50 trillion were extracted from workers in the West to prop up the profits of Western corporations in a time period of diminishing growth. The power disparity saw corporations change from a three-part model to a two-part model, with labor disappearing as a factor, and companies run by a managerial class and a shareholder class. Labor, however, might come into an ascendant position again, according to economist Charles Goodhart in his book, The Great Demographic Reversal. He argues that because of the one-child policy in China and a lack of new workers to replace those aging out, this will shrink the labor pools overseas. Corporations will have to look for workers domestically again. With declining birth rates all around the world and stresses being placed on the international supply chains, emerging factors may favor workers again. They'll have more bargaining power. Scarcity, just to repeat again, imparts value. This happened before, after the Black Death in Europe in the 1300s. One-third to one-half of Europeans died. As a result of the worker shortage, aristocrats were willing to bargain with laborers to return to the fields. The laborers agreed to do so, but only if they obtained political rights. This was at the heart of the death of serfdom on the continent. According to Charles Goodhart, a similar phenomenon might be in play in upcoming decades. This will mean the return of unions and increased political rights. But not only that, the resurgence of labor's influence on corporate boards. The corporate governance model will be more in balance. Each company may have something like an internal union, with human resources departments taking over that function. John Stuart Mill, in Considerations on Representative Government, had an interesting metaphor. He said that a republic was more stable because in representing the interests of the people, it was like a pyramid resting on its base, whereas oligarchies were inherently more unstable because they only represented the interests of the few, which, as he said, is like having an inverted pyramid balanced precariously on its tip. Corporate governance models that only serve the shareholder class are like oligarchies. Hopefully, as corporations adopt more of a republican flavor, the unstable markets of the last 30 years and the turbulent effect that this had on the wider society will begin to stabilize again. When the news leaves a bad taste in your mouth, luckily, there's the Daniel Natal Pez dispenser. It gives out only red pills. As does the New American Magazine. Get your subscription today.